you deal with a few items in there that act as either a lubricant or, in some cases, a soap that's a, sort of a cleanser that's designed to avoid bacteria or other substances forming. It's very typical of what you could find under your kitchen sink at home. I know the chemicals get a lot of attention, and that's a legitimate question. I think we should point out at the outset that we in New York disclose chemicals. There's no hidden element to them. And what's probably important to note is you can go to fracfocus.org and have an indication of detailed information related to what those chemicals are so that there's no misunderstanding. But it is provided to the DEC, and that information is also posted at each well location.
So you're saying that those people who say that you're not forthcoming enough, that you don't tell us exactly what chemicals they are not telling the truth.
Well, I don't want to cast dispersions on the motives of people that are opposed to drilling and bring up a variety of different reasons to oppose it. I'll simply say that I do know as a practical matter that we have hydrofracked hundreds of wells in New York State, and New York State DEC does require that information to be disclosed. And I don't think you've ever seen anything come out of the regulatory agency to suggest that it's not being disclosed.
Do you think that the governor wants hydrofracking?
You know, I have not had a firsthand discussion with the governor, so I probably can just give you sort of a view from a bit of afar. But I would say that I believe this governor is a very pragmatic individual. I believe from what he has indicated that he understands the economic potential in a state that desperately needs that economic potential, particularly upstate where I grew up. And I believe that as long as he is satisfied that it can be done safely, that science should dictate rather than the emotion and, quite honestly, a lot of the hysteria that's been associated with this issue.
There are some who say that the chemicals in the water create a problem for our drinking water. Is that true?
No, and again, there's a misnomer here. I mean, if you think about it, there are substances out there, whether it's even chlorine or different things that we're commonly using, that you wouldn't plan on drinking in a concentrated basis. But the part that's missed in all this is that you are dealing with a substance that is introduced into a rock that's a mile deep. The means by which you go down to access the gas involves steel encased in cement, encased in steel, and it's replicated sometimes 2 to 3 times through the shallower water formations. You conduct X-rays and screens and logs to determine that the bonds are proper. And the substance that's actually introduced into the subsurface simply does not come in contact with a water supply. And that's the great misnomer, because people think that they saw something on HBO that implied something different, or they heard about Dimock, Pennsylvania, or they heard about someplace in Wyoming. And that's the great misfortune, because a lot of misinformation gets out. It's a headline in the New York Times. And later on, when there's a retraction, whether it's in Texas or whether it's in Dimock, PA, I don't know if you just saw that the EPA basically just concluded that there was no hydrofracking issue in Dimock, PA, despite all the coverage we've seen over the last almost 2 years and all the banner headlines in certain prominent newspapers. So the unfortunate part is the retraction or the clarification. The actual science very often is buried on page, 19.
So when we see documentaries which show people burning their water, setting their water on fire, is that claptrap? I mean, what is that?
Well, first of all, I assume you know this. I did not know that you could call something a documentary.
Yeah.
And it can actually be an award-winning documentary. And by Hollywood standards, the truth has nothing to do with it. If it has entertainment value, Hollywood will allow you to call it a documentary. So you can do something that is sensational, that uses creative photography or trick photography. At the end of the day, they're simply looking for entertainment value. So I think that needs to be said at the outset. I would also point out to you that, as I said, I grew up in upstate New York. I've lived here almost 60 years. And it's fairly common for people that are used to working with water wells that you can encounter shallow pockets of methane gas associated with simply drilling a water well. And people typically have vents on those water wells to allow the gas to basically float off. What you saw in the movie that I think you're alluding to
Sure.
was simply, it was methane gas, shallow methane gas that was simply associated with shallow water deposits. But if you watch the movie, you would have thought that you were burning hydrofrac fluids because they merge the two concepts together and don't bother explaining to the viewer the difference. So you weren't burning any hydrofracking fluids. There have been study after study. The EPA, this EPA, this administration, the chief administrator, Lisa Jackson, has been on record as saying there's absolutely no evidence that there's ever been contamination of water supply with hydrofrac fluids. What you will see is in different occasions association of methane gas, particularly shallow methane, with water supplies in the shallower areas, but not the hydrofracking that takes place almost a mile deep.
I wanted to get back to the chemical composition. We have heard that some fairly dangerous chemicals like benzene have been used in these water. Is that not so?
You know, rather than get in, I mean, you understand that each manufacturer, sort of like, you know, if you remember the days, if you're old enough as I am to remember, you know, the Coke portion, Coca-Cola had that secret potion number 7 that they didn't tell anybody about. And eventually Pepsi tried to come up with their own version and a variety of other folks, Dr. Pepper and whatnot. At the end of the day, each of the manufacturers has their own belief as far as what the combination should be in terms of basically allowing for. Part of it are just soaps that are designed to cleanse the pipe to make sure that you don't build up any bacteria or whatnot. Some of it is a lubricant. I think the important thing to keep getting back to, Alan, is that it's not what you put into the ground in this case that matters. It's whether that comes into contact with anything that we don't want it to come into contact with. And over 1 million wells have been drilled in this country and hydraulically fractured. And there is absolutely no evidence. There's a lot of hysteria. But when the scientists actually get a chance to come in and examine it, 1 million wells, and there's not one example of evidence where hydrofrac fluids, the chemicals, have ever come in contact with water supply. I think that's something people shouldn't lose track of.
Well, no, as you know, there are those who will bring to hearings their water that I heard about this in Binghamton that they say is contaminated. And you say there's not one example. Who's not telling the truth here?
Well, I was at those hearings. I'll give you a sort of an anecdote in a moment if you'd like.
Sure.
It was sort of cute. But to answer your question first, what people have are issues with water. You know, my sister lives up in Alaska. She has a high mineral content copper that she has to be careful about showering because sometimes, particularly with women that may lighten their hair or touch it up, that content can cause your hair to turn other colors that you don't intend. People in upstate New York and upper Pennsylvania are very familiar with the fact that you're going down and you're dealing with something that very often is naturally occurring. It's not purified in any way, and you're dealing with what is in the subsurface. And there is no regulation to speak of on water well drilling. So when we talk about all the emphasis that's on the content of what you do to drill a gas well, you don't have those same controls on water well drilling. So what people are showing you, I'm not questioning that people at times, including folks that showed up at the EPA hearing, may have had issues with their water supply. It could have nothing to do with oil and gas drilling. In fact, very often that's the case. It can simply be that they may be located near an auto shop or something else that might have had communication over time. Remember, the real issue with water contamination is not hydrofracking and not deep well drilling. It's surface activity. It could be a spillage that takes place on the surface, whether it's a auto repair shop that didn't realize in the earlier days what they should or shouldn't do with the product they take out when they change our oil or deal with our radiators, or a whole series of other areas, farms that have treatment that goes on into the fields that ultimately has runoff in those fields, even the road salts that we put, you know, down in the wintertime in upstate to protect and melt the ice, to protect us from bad things that could happen if the ice doesn't melt. There's runoff associated with all those things. Some of the chemicals that you were asking about earlier are the same thing that we have to keep the water from freezing in on our windshield wipers. And so, you know, every time you and I hit that sprayer in the wintertime to clean our windshield, where do you think that mist goes? That mist actually goes, you know, to the surface of the ground, and ultimately gravity causes that to go down. That's where the potential is to have an issue with water supply rather than a substance migrating up from a depth of 1,000 or 5,000 feet deep. Just one quick anecdote, though, since you mentioned EPA, if you don't mind. What I find very often frustrating is that there's a major disconnect between the consumers of energy and an understanding of what it takes to create that energy. You know, New York State imports over 95% of its natural gas needs. And while we spend a lot of time debating in New York State whether or not hydrofracking should be allowed, we are incredibly dependent on that. If we simply said as a matter of principle, not only will we not allow the drilling of it, but we won't allow the consumption of it in New York State, any natural gas that's been hydraulically fractured, what do you think would happen? Overnight, are we going to burn more coal to generate the electricity? Are we going to decide that we've got to keep on some of those nuclear facilities that are being discussed right now as being mothballed because of serious disposal issues? When I was over at the EPA hearing, there was a great debate over where the hearing should take place, whether they had to move it from Binghamton, the University of Binghamton, to the Carrier Dome because they were concerned about the great numbers that were coming up, particularly from New York City. And I talked to some of the organizers, you know, that were hosting it at Binghamton for the EPA, and they said one of the most comical things, well, you tell me whether it's comical, were the New York City folks that were commenting about the busloads of people they were going to bring up to protest hydrofracking. And they found out that the auditorium at the University of Binghamton, where it was going to be hosted, did not have air conditioning. This was in September. And they said, you can't possibly expect us to come all the way up here and sit in a room like that without air conditioning.
And yet,
you'd think there'd be a connection somewhere with how that air conditioning is created.
We're talking to Dennis Holbrook, Executive Vice President and Chief Legal Officer of Norse Energy Corporation. Okay, so in contrast to that, I was interested in the polls that have been taken, which showed New York City, whose water areas have been exempted from hydrofracking, are basically more in favor of the process. You're sort of scapegoating them, but on the other hand, they're the ones who seem to be more in favor.
Well, New York City is a great city, and hopefully I'm not scapegoating New York City in general. I was giving you a characterization of certain folks that are anti-shale development were coming up from the city. So in fairness, no, you are correct that polls have indicated that even New York City, which is amazing when you consider all of the media hype that has been generated out of New York City, in particular, by the various different anti-organizations, many of which are headquartered in New York City. And this has been a major fundraiser for many of those organizations as well. But it is interesting that even in New York City, with all that, you're correct that it's fairly even in terms of the public perception about whether this process should be allowed to move forward. I think what's also interesting is upstate, you have sort of, you know, people look and say, well, I'm surprised there isn't more of a plurality, I guess, in favor of an upstate. I think the part people miss sometimes is the way these polls are conducted. Upstate New York is sort of defined literally as anything north, I think, of Westchester. But when you factor in the major population centers in upstate, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, and realize that there's no drilling proposed in any of those metropolitan areas, and yet they tend to represent the greater populace. If you allowed for what people actually believe and hope for and are constantly calling me up and asking, you know, whether there's a chance I might get out to their farm to get a chance to drill before they lose it, you find overwhelmingly in the southern tier support for our industry. The possible exception in all that might be two areas that are a little bit more touristy or a little bit more, academia, which would, of course, be the Ithaca area in Tompkins County and the Cooperstown area. But, you know, those aside, I think most of upstate, when you get away from the major metropolitan areas, are pretty strongly supportive of this. And we've had great support in the towns that we've been operating in for the last 15 years in central New York and 25 years in western New York.
So don't you think when you say you sort of dismiss the academic side, that those are the people who, you know, Dr. Steingraber and other people like that, who study this all the time and who are the scientists, why are you so dismissive of them?
Well, I think you'll find out if you really want to go to the studies, you know, there's a difference between, you know, someone that comes into a study sort of with their own agenda and someone that I think is more objective. The perfect example would be Cornell University, where you had some early studies by professors there that tried to suggest that natural gas was less clean overall in terms of its contribution to the environment than burning coal. And it was such a laughable premise that was brought on by a professor that didn't even really have the expertise in the area that ultimately other professors at Cornell had to come out with their own separate study because the university, I think, quite honestly, was embarrassed. You had a whole series of other universities, including Carnegie Mellon, MIT, you know, the list can go on and on, basically debunking the quality of the work that was performed by certain academics. And what you need to understand is where the money comes from. A lot of these, we have this sort of impression that because it's academia, or it's a not-for-profit, that somehow there isn't an agenda. The Park Foundation has been behind not only the first Cornell study, but a whole series of other studies that have been out there. And again, if you look behind it, there's a money trail that you can follow through the Park Foundation that relates to a lot of the activity that you've seen throughout the Ithaca area.
So what's the money trail? I don't get it.
The Park Foundation has an agenda. And what you'll find is there's a link between... I think you'll find the Gasland movie perhaps had funding from the likes of a Park Foundation.
Yeah, but what's good? I'm sorry, Dennis, but why does the Park Foundation need to do this? Are you making an accusation that somehow they're making money from this?
No, I think you find people, sometimes you find next generation, you know, folks that feel guilty about the monies that they've inherited. And what you find out is that they have an agenda that may or may not reflect reality. If that particular association is absolutely convinced that green is the way to go, whether it's realistic or not, you may simply find yourself with an anti-fuel, fossil fuel bias, and they simply will look for any opportunity to take shots at that industry.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about what happens to the water. It's forced down. You got to deal with me easily because, you know, I don't know everything. And then it comes out. Where does that water go?
The water that is brought down, I assume that this is the premise here is in reference to the hydraulic fracturing process.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. The substances that are brought down into the subsurface are pushed out into the rock formation that you've targeted that has, and remember, if there wasn't closure down there, if there wasn't trapping, you never would have the natural gas to go for to begin with. So while the rock is difficult to move the gas through, there's a capping rock over that's completely impervious. That's why the gas is trapped. What you typically have, Alan, is you have the majority of the water that's introduced down there that's actually absorbed into the rock because the rock is undersaturated. It's like a sponge, and so it actually takes in the water as well as the sand that acts as the prop to open up this very small microscopic pores to allow the gas to flow through it. A small portion of the water is returned as part of the process of sort of pushing the water in, and then the pressure created by putting that straw down there draws the water and sand and composition back out. So a portion is left in the formation and probably comes out over time as the gas is produced.
But we've heard about these sort of virtual lakes, water that comes out and has to be put somewhere. Where does that disposed water go?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a lot of misinformation. Initially, there was a lot of hype out there because of the quantities that were being used to drill. The assumption was that all that volume was going to come back up.
Well, not all of it, but as you say, some of it.
Okay. So what's happening now, as I say, first of all, the majority of the water is being absorbed into the rock. The portion that comes back up, the good story now is almost all of it, where it took like 95% of it is recycled. So we actually are able to reuse that same water supply again in the next drilling process.
So it goes down again. And where is it kept? Where is it kept in the meantime, Dennis Holbert?
Well, we have storage tanks typically on the surface. Originally, early on in New York, you were also allowed to have ponds that you would create, which would have to be lined, and you were allowed to store that. But if you look at the rules being proposed under the SGIS now that
SGIS?
I'm sorry. Yeah, we get into the acronyms. Keep me honest here. That is the review process that has been taking place at the DEC, which is the Department of Environmental Conservation in New York State, the parties that have oversight over drilling, oil and gas drilling. And they have been engaged in a 4-year study basically designed to update their drilling regulations. The original rules were a generic, it was referred to as a generic environmental impact statement. And now this one is the supplemental. So it's SGEIS. It's the supplemental one, basically designed to update the earlier rules. The earlier rules were came into play in 1992 and have governed literally tens of thousands of the wells that have been drilled safely in New York State. What caused the SGEIS, the DEC, to look to update their rules was that the newer drilling has involved a larger volume associated with hydrofracking than the earlier drilling did. So they felt the need to take the time to make sure that they looked at, this is the DEC, looked at all the environmental impacts to make sure that it was thought through. And I give them credit for that. I mean, it's been,
it's been
a long process.
Right, Dennis, but obviously they've done it for a reason. And the reason, to me, seems clear. They weren't satisfied with the old way of doing it for some reason. I don't know you'll give us their reasons, but
I'll give you my impression.
Yeah, sure.
Would you like that?
Sure.
No, if you are correct that they obviously felt the need to update. Part of what triggered this was that Chesapeake, one of the oil and gas producers out there that you may have heard of, proposed to get a permit to drill a well in what is part of the New York City watershed area.
Uh-huh.
And you, I think, can appreciate that that's a sensitive area for many folks, particularly the folks down in the New York metropolitan area, because they're drilling with one of the few unfiltered water supplies in the country. And this caught the attention of the downstate folks who probably, quite honestly, Alan, many of them probably had no clue that we've had an oil and gas industry in this state for almost 200 years, that the first commercial natural gas well ever drilled in this country was drilled in Fredonia, New York, you know, just south of Buffalo, almost 200 years ago. So we've had a long, long history here. I think the good news is most folks weren't even aware of it if it wasn't happening in your backyard.